Welcome to Talent Hub Talk. I'm Ben Duncombe, and on this podcast, I will be interviewing prominent and inspirational figures from both the local ANZ and global Salesforce Ohana. In today's episode, I am joined by Carl Brundage. Carl is the master architect for OdaSaver in the US, and is also a Salesforce certified technical architect. We look at his career plans and dreams while he was growing up and through his education, and then delve a little bit deeper around what his career looked like before Salesforce. We then look at his first exposure to Salesforce and what he thought at the time, and then why he got started on the certification journey and what certifications mean to him. Carl is one of the most certified Salesforce professionals I've ever spoken to, so it was really interesting to get his view on the value of certifications and why he went down that path originally. We then look at working in product development companies and how that potentially benefited or challenged him when he was going for his CTA review board. And we look at what that process was like going from identifying CTA as a goal to then plugging gaps and ultimately achieving that. Carl has trained a number of aspiring CTAs and sat on review boards. So it's really interesting to get his view on potentially where people underestimate the CTA process. We also delve a little bit deeper into an area that Carl has worked extensively, which is Einstein. And we look at the platform, where it's positioned, and the kind of space in which that plays now, and what he's excited for from the Salesforce Einstein platform moving forward. We'll look at Carl's day-to-day role working in a product company, an AppExchange company as a CTA, and then also delve a little bit deeper around the non-technical skills that he would look for when hiring for his team or identifying talent to help grow and build the business in which he works. And then we look at what continues to excite Carl about the Salesforce ecosystem and platform. So for me, this was a really, really insightful interview. Carl's a really great guy. He gives a lot back to the ecosystem and just is a really, really informative, nice person to speak to. And I really hope you enjoy the episode as much as I did recording it. And if you do, please do subscribe for future episodes that are coming through.
Carl, thank you very much. You are one of the most patient people I know because this is our second attempt and it almost didn't happen again this morning. But here we are. Fingers crossed we'll get to the end of this podcast. So thank you for joining us.
Oh, my pleasure, Ben. I appreciate you having me on.
The reason I wanted to get you on is because we had a chat through Virtual Dreaming and I got to know a bit more about you and your background. And I think obviously you've got a really inspiring story to share. And I always like to start at the beginning. So before you even knew Salesforce was a thing and growing up, what were your kind of plans and dreams as a youngster growing up and coming into the world of education and work?
So if I think back to maybe some of my earlier memories, we had computers growing up. We had a VIC-20 and a Commodore 64. And you know, I have this still the distinct memory of wanting to play games on this computer. And what we had to do is we had cassette tapes. So the old cassette tapes where you had magnetic tape and you'd have to put it in this player and you had a little booklet with stuff scribbled in because you had to go on a counter and get it queued up right to the right spot. You'd hit play and pause at the same time and then do the load commands. And then maybe 20 minutes later, you'd be able to actually play a game like Painter or Hard Hat. These were the generic versions of Pac-Man and Donkey Kong, but those memories definitely stuck with me as a kid. And then as I got older, definitely some influence from my father. You know, this is the same guy that had the little spiral book. Well, when I started driving, you had to record delayed how much gas you put in another little book in the car. So the engineering influence from him was definitely very strong, which made me want to pursue a career in some type of engineering. And then once I got to college, found my way into computers based off of all the prior experience. It seemed like a really good place to be.
Sure. So then when you kind of had that passion for computing, did you want to be a software engineer straight away? Or like what was the original plan to utilize your interest in computing?
I think I was always caught up in being an engineer based off of that the family influence of having that as a degree. So I really went down the path of looking at the hardware side of computers. I even did some VLSI courses where I was designing chips. I went out to interview for an internship with Intel at one point in Arizona. And kind of coming back from that, I really thought about, well, where do I want to go? Because it's pretty cool what you could do here, but the path to have something meaningful seemed very, very long and maybe not daunting isn't the right word, but you could work for 20 years and maybe you'd be responsible for a memory chip. So I decided to try some software. I did an internship at a small software company, and I was writing HTML help manuals to give to our customers. So as an intern, I could see the impact on the software side in driving results for this business, especially a small business, much quicker. So right before my senior year, I pivoted and did a lot of the software courses and have really had mostly software-related career job opportunities after college.
Yeah, so what did the early career days look like in terms of you'd completed your university studies? What then?
My first full-time position was at a company that was building software for insurance industry. We had data warehousing business intelligence tools. This was back right around 2000 was when I graduated college. And we had almost a terabyte data warehouse, which now, you know, hey, terabyte is kind of tiny. If you're not in petabytes, it doesn't really matter. But at the time, it was pretty big. So there's a lot of kind of cool engineering technology challenges with the database systems that we were using and how long it took to load data. So a lot of ways that you could look at really hard problems and figure out how do you approach this and make some software that would scale. So that was the first kind of position where I got the fundamentals of software. I also, in that position, thought, hey, there's more to life than just the bits and bytes and the technology piece of it. I really want to understand the business that goes into deciding, well, what do we build from a software perspective? So I went back part-time while I was working and got my MBA at that time as well before I moved into some other roles where I spent a lot of time in SaaS software, so developing, supporting, implementing everything you can imagine from a SaaS software perspective. And that was for life sciences and pharmaceutical companies.
Yeah, nice. Because that's not a move that we typically see. Like we see a lot of people now looking at MBAs, but not always people from software engineering backgrounds. So how valuable was that for your, like if you look at now where you are in your career, how much kind of do you put that back towards going down the MBA path as well?
I think there's a lot of value of it from an architect perspective because decisions aren't always made on logic. And I mean that from a technical perspective. Like this is clearly the best technical solution that you can put in. There's a lot of other decisions that come in from the business side. Things like what's our return on investment? You know, is it worth spending on this project in order to get these type of benefits of it? So understanding that picture and being able to influence decisions as an architect, I think it makes me better in being able to deliver a successful technology outcome by understanding some of the business decisions that are going into why something is chosen or not chosen.
Sure. Yeah, nice. So at what point did you hear of Salesforce and you know, what was the interest at that point?
When I was working at the company that served pharmaceuticals, one of our competitors was Veeva, which runs on top of the Salesforce platform. So I was a little bit aware of Salesforce from a competitive perspective, but really didn't have a lot of knowledge. It was my next job that brought me into the Salesforce ecosystem. The technology that we were using, while it was interesting, it really only applied to our customers. So if something happened to my position, maybe I could go work for one of our customers and that was it. So I really wanted to find something that had broader appeal that I could grow my career on. And that's when I moved to a company that was an SI, they were a system integrator, but they had wanted to build a commerce app, so the ability to do commerce on top of Salesforce communities. And I came in to help lead the product development team in that role. So that's where I really got my feet wet with Salesforce.
And obviously going straight into product development, what was the thinking in terms of broadening your understanding of the platform? Not just building products on it, but then going, right, I'm going to go all in on Salesforce and kind of go as broad as possible to really gain the exposure I need.
When I started with Salesforce, there was a lot of similarities between what I was doing before. From a conceptual standpoint of you're modeling accounts and contacts, you're making calls, you're dealing with opportunities. So the nomenclature might have been different, but from a conceptual perspective, it was very easy to translate from one piece to the next. I think the biggest thing from a product perspective that was different was really needing to think about the needs of a market rather than the needs of a customer. So do you want this screen to show in blue or purple? Well, honestly, we should probably make it configurable because one client's going to want it one way and one client's going to want it another way. So you really had to think about how you could deliver something that wasn't just on top of Salesforce, but had the right levers to make it behave differently from one client to the next. So that was, I think, very valuable in broadening my perspective of Salesforce can do A or B, but it can also be made to do lots of other things through configuration.
Sure. And one thing that really struck me that I didn't know about you before virtual dreaming was how many certifications you have. I think like at that point, that's the most I've ever heard anyone having. And I understand that you've been involved in some of the beta releases of certifications now. But back then, what was your first approach to getting certifications and why did you feel that was important?
When I came into that first company, that first role inside of Salesforce, I was working with a pretty small team. There's three other developers. And at the time, each of them had five or six Salesforce certifications, which back then, I think the most you could have was seven. So they had essentially everything except technical architect. And they weren't feeling the love. So we had a main building, but this team was actually in one of the annexes. And it was one of those annexes where you had to walk through another conference room, and we were sitting at a small conference table. You know, the building was thrown together so quickly that there was a wall going down the middle, and the outlet was like half covered in the wall. Like, they didn't even bother to get the wall where the outlet was. So the team wasn't feeling that, you know, the company necessarily was bought into what they were doing. They had other managers that had come through before and wanted to do something else. So I, from a certification perspective, I want to show them, yes, I might be coming in new, but I'm serious about this. I believe in what we're doing. I believe in you. I want to show that I'm going to invest in my career by getting certifications. You're doing the right thing too. And that led me to starting in pursue developer and admin, advanced admin, and some of the sales and service cloud consultants at that time.
Sure. And obviously you have got a lot now, and we'll talk about the CTA, but I often get the question of, you know, which certification is most hot in the market, or what should I do next? And what approaches, because obviously you have been involved in the betas, but have you been strategic around which ones you've gone after, excluding the CTA, because obviously that's a journey in itself?
I don't think I've been particularly strategic. I started out taking what was available when there was only five or six that you could do. You know, there was some period of time where advanced developer was put on hold for a year, and I got caught up in the transition there. So I did my first five fairly quickly, and then there wasn't anything else to do. So after then, I was pretty much either taking them as they came out, so there'd be one or two new ones a year, or participating in the betas like I did with the designer exam and marketing cloud and commerce cloud. So for me, it's been just take them as they come. So I haven't had to necessarily pick and say, "Ooh, you know, I'm interested in this area. I want to go here next." That's what I would tell people, is don't necessarily look and say, "Wow, if I could only be a marketing cloud developer certified, like my career is going to take off." Well, if you don't like working with marketing cloud, why would you do that? You know, pick the things that interest you, because it's going to be easier for to learn. You're going to enjoy working on it. So don't chase something. Go with where your interests are.
Yeah, I get the question pretty much daily, and I say, well, which certification do you think you're most likely to pass? Because like you're trying to get certified to show that you already have the knowledge, right? So absolutely, if you already have the knowledge, then go and pass that one. So then my next question is around like when you decided to become a CTA. But before I get to that question, had you ever worked out of product development in the Salesforce ecosystem before you decided that?
Kind of. So I've always been at SI/product companies, except for my current role, where we're a pure product company, meaning there's always been a consulting aspect to it, whether it is a different team or it's consulting on top of the product. So the concept of going in and speccing out a new implementation or a new product for the customer, that wasn't a foreign idea to me. After I left the first product company, SI, I spent a lot of time developing solutions for financials and real estate, where it was the traditional, hey, we are going to implement Salesforce. We need you to paint a vision for us. We need you to build system landscapes, object models, and come up with what a project would look like. So I had some experience with that along with the product development aspects.
So were you confident that at the moment you decided to go down the path, were you confident that you had a really decent understanding of the breadth of the platform?
Not necessarily. So when I first looked at it back when there was only six or seven, I kind of laughed and said, no, that's not for me. I'm not at that point. What helped me solidify thinking this is something that's possible is after the designers had come out, and at I think it was Dreamforce 2016, the pyramid was released, where it talked about the stepping stones of you're filling in this knowledge gap with the designers, and then you make that jump. that's the point that it seemed like, hey, this could be reasonable because the designers did a good job of expanding me into areas that I might not have been working in before. So some of the single sign-ons, you know, if you don't have a client that wants to implement single sign-on, you may not be exposed to that topic. So those are the areas that I felt like helped with the breadth, and then some of the work experience definitely in presenting to people and doing system landscapes, object models, that filled in some of the presentation aspects as well.
Sure. Throughout the journey, was there ever a time where you just felt you there was like a topic or something you just weren't getting and it took a lot of effort and time to kind of get your head around?
I think there's levels of understanding. And what I find for me is I can grasp a decent amount of content fairly quickly going through it the first time. But it's oftentimes when you go back for the second or third look, or you have a particular project, that aha moment or that really deep learning gets unlocked. And for me, that definitely happened with identity. So if I forward, not tell you all the steps, but I got to a point where, okay, heading into the exam, there's some things I really needed to focus on. And the way I went back and took a look at actually how OAuth flows and single sign-on work down to what are the actual HTTP requests that go back and forth, that kind of unlocked it for me to say, oh, I really get how this works now. I'm very comfortable talking about this is what a design looks like and these are the pieces you need to implement in order to be successful.
Okay, nice. And end to end, from the moment you decided to go down the path to parsing, how long was that?
Yeah, that's a question I get a lot, and I give maybe not an answer that people like, but there's kind of two phases, right? There's everything that I've ever done that's prepared me for this, which doesn't kind of count in your total prep, but the totality of who you are is what makes you successful. So if I go back even to when I was in high school, I acted in plays and musicals. So I had a stage presence in delivering. I spent time, you know, giving speeches, whether it was at graduation or at different events or a church service on Sunday, being in front of people and working on delivery and comfort. That all helps you with the CTA. But at that time, it wasn't like, hey, I want to be a CTA when I grow up. So what I tend to tell people is, let's look at like my last kind of push, the marathon training, if you will, of how do I get over that hurdle? I would say it really started in late summer of 2017. I was going to attend a 601 workshop, and it was kind of before 601 was formalized as a workshop. It was in October, and I don't want to go there and embarrass myself, right? So I'm going to be with peers, I'm going to be with other CTAs. So I started brushing up on material, looking at designers, thinking about scenarios and how I want to present. And then from that workshop, so at the end of October, Andy Oganoff, who was in there, CTA, said, hey, I think you're ready. And I didn't have any other CTAs that were working with me. And that kind of gave me the confidence to say, yes, schedule me for December. So really from all of November and then the first half of December, got up 5 o'clock in the morning, did a couple hours before the kids got up, did stuff with the kids, worked all day, did stuff within the evening, and then studied again. And the same thing on the weekend. So that kind of last marathon was August to October, kind of hard. And then November, December, super hard. So what's that, like 4 months? But again, it's everything else that led up to it that prepared me so that I could make a 4 month push. If you don't have the same experience or a different experience, maybe it's a 6 month push or a 9 month push or a 1 year push. It just depends on where you're coming and starting from.
It's interesting because I now, like, I think a lot of people, they start their journey so much earlier now, like people with a couple of years Salesforce experience that haven't come from the software engineering background, mm-hmm. the big data warehousing background, like the product background, are starting their journey after getting a couple of certs, and they're like, I think they look so far ahead that sometimes it's not always the best approach.
Yeah, if I think about it, right, I didn't spend a lot of time in the Salesforce ecosystem before becoming a CTA. So it was maybe 3.5 years. But before that, I worked with 100 customers, you know, across the world. So there was not a lack of the enterprise architecture and working on big projects and gaining all that type of experience. So if you're coming into Salesforce and you have that equivalent experience, yeah, maybe you can go on a quicker path to CTA. But if you're coming in starting fresh and you haven't seen those things, there's a lot of steps in between that you're going to need to be successful. Passing the designer is a good achievement, but it's such a gap and jump to get from a designer to being able to be ready for the review board. It's a place that I so often see people kind of not understanding the difference, or like, hey, I got my designer, CTA is next. Well, yeah, it's next, but there's a lot of work to do in between there to be ready.
This episode of Talent Hub Talk is sponsored by our friends from Flow Republic. Flow Republic is a Salesforce architect academy that works with individuals and businesses to upskill and prepare Salesforce architects for the CTA review board. They also have a number of other offerings, including coaching and guiding on areas such as soft skills, consulting, and design training. Flow Republic are some of the brightest minds in the Salesforce ecosystem and have a proven track record of developing Salesforce professionals and helping architects to reach their goal of becoming a CTA. To find out more about the value they can add, please check out flowrepublic.com.
You have sat on review boards, I believe, and been a judge. Is that right?
I have.
So, what do you see as being the ones that you have sat on? Is where do you feel that people have gone? Well, obviously, right, they know their stuff, but wrong. Like, where have you seen people fall down? And is it like a lack of preparation or a lack of understanding of how hard it really is?
So I think there's a couple of themes I would draw out. One is, if you look at a lot of the certifications or preparation up to the designers, it's very narrowly topic focused. And you may be thinking, wow, you know, that identity exam was really hard. It wasn't narrow. What are you talking about, Carl? Well, if you think about it, they're all slices by themselves. But from a CTA perspective, it's the integrated nature of everything. So if I pick on something like, hey, how am I going to deal with large data volumes? Because it has effect on sharing and it has an effect on data integration because you need to get data in and out. Like, it's not just a choice of one area that affects only that area. It has this holistic effect to a project. So you need to be thinking systematically and holistically, not just an individual choice here. Only is in isolation. It is part of the bigger system. So that's the first area. And the second area is people need to be comfortable with having ownership for the whole project. So having ownership for everything that's going on. You know, if you're sitting on a project and you're like, oh, wow, you know, that customer is happy and I'm glad that's not my problem to deal with. Well, that's probably not an architect mindset, right? As an architect, you're there to deliver customer success. Deliver a successful project. It's not common that a customer will be like, oh, you know what? That was a terrible project, but wow, what a great architect we had there. You know, you succeed or fail as a team. So you need to be thinking about all these things and taking accountability for it. So maybe it's customer. Maybe it's like, oh boy, I'm glad I don't have to set up our DevOps. Well, then you're probably not an architect mindset, because an architect, they're going to have their hands in all of it because it's all necessary in order for you to deliver customer success.
Yeah, because it's and this is another point that we touched on in the virtual dreaming session with Sebastian, because he, like I was explaining that a lot of the people I will speak to do a bit of solution design, mm-hmm. and now they're an architect, but there's so much more to it than just being able to design a solution that, you know, mm-hmm. you're looking at the whole environment. And I guess if you get to the CTA review board, you know that because you're well past that point, right? But is that what you've seen from other people in the journey that think they're becoming an architect, but really they don't have the breadth of the skill set just yet?
Yeah, and I think there's definitely different types of architects, right? You have, I'll call it code architects, and there's people that are much better than me at designing exactly how all the APEX structures should be and the factory service patterns that we're using and using injection and all those things. And that's a great skill set unto itself. And then there's data architects that are whizzes at moving integration in and out. And there's people that I've had security discussions with that are like way deeper than me. And I definitely feel that things are secure. But that technical architect is really maybe an enterprise architect in another language, where they're looking over all those things. So you have to have sufficient depth in each of those areas. You can't leave one out and say, oh, you know what? I'm not going to worry about security. Well, no, you have to worry about all those things. So thinking about, are you just an architect in one of those areas, which is good? Or do you really want to be that enterprise architect where you're looking across everything that's part of the customer project, including some soft things that are like communication and stakeholder management and change management that aren't as necessarily fun for some people as sitting and writing code?
Yeah, sure. And that's a really interesting point around the title, because I think I won't ask you to comment on this necessarily, but I think the title can be a bit misleading, and I think it gives the wrong impression sometimes. And I think perhaps if they were to if they could go back, they would have called it something different. The CTA.
I think if they had to do over, yeah, it would be closer to the enterprise architect role that has emerged, because that's where you spend a lot of time engaging with other architects or CTOs or CIOs. It's not necessarily with people that are writing code all day. That's an aspect of it, but it's really how does the overall system work.
Sure. And you mentioned you started with decent sized data sets, mm-hmm. but kind of nothing of what people see today. And data has always kind of been a bit of a passion and something that's followed you through your career, or you followed it. Now we're seeing Einstein being obviously something that's growing and building momentum. And you, obviously data has been a trend throughout your career. And obviously you're in the data space right now, but you're also really passionate about Einstein, and you've done a fair bit of work in the Einstein space. How do you feel the Einstein product is positioned in the market and compared to competitors now, and how are you seeing that grow?
So I've spent a lot of time working with specifically the Einstein Analytics product. I jumped on that when it first came out based off of my prior experience. And if I go back to 2000, why were we building this solution for insurance companies? And it was two reasons. One, it was get it in the hands of business users, because it was locked away in IT or in systems that they didn't have access to, and make it fast and easy for them to do analytics so that you didn't need an analyst in order to run a report where, hey, I have a question and now we have an analyst that has to go away for a week and come back. Einstein Analytics, it's the same promise. Like we in 20 years, we haven't necessarily delivered on that of doing a good job of enabling business users to understand what's going on and to do it fast and easy. And that's where I think if you look at what EA has done and can do on top of the platform, it's delivering on that promise. So it's very easy with some of the templated apps to take a look at your service metrics or take a look at your sales pipeline performance and have that embedded and contextual and be right where you're using Salesforce. It's not look at this other analytics tool or go to this dashboard in here that gets emailed to you and then copy it to another email and send it to the rep who needs to do something. It's all right there. So from that aspect, I think it's really filling the gap well. If I take Einstein as the broader product suite that means everything, there's no doubt that AI is the future. So being able to, instead of sift through petabytes of data, have things surface to you that you need to pay attention to, and then you apply your knowledge in order to act on it. Where I think the challenge is going to come is when we become not dependent, but reliant upon AI so much. How do we make sure we still have that AI in our development processes or our testing processes? Because if you think about it, we have all this great production data, but we need to secure it. We need to keep it safe. We don't want to just give developers access to every customer in the org. But if we're going to develop processes that involve AI, if it doesn't have representative data, it's not going to give you the right results in testing or in development. So being able to take out representative data sets, being able to anonymize or pseudo anonymize, so where you hide the personal information, but you still retain the business value. For example, taking somebody's age and instead of making it an exact birth date, put it in an age range. So instead of being 25, you're 24 to 27. You can still protect information, but then have representative data that you can use for the development and testing purposes. I think that's where we need to unlock the next set of tools and procedures so that you can be successful in an Einstein world.
Yeah, nice. I think it's a good overview of Einstein, because I think it's still a bit of an unknown for a lot of people. I mean, it's kind of like a buzzword now, right? How a lot of these things start as a buzzword and then we get a bit deeper. So yeah, it's good to get that insight. Now, obviously, product companies, again, have been a trend through your career. You're working for a product company now. What does the role of a CTA actually look like in a product company?
So my role, I work with prospects, I work with customers, and I work with partners. So I spend a lot of time enabling others to understand what data challenges they are and how our product solves them. So it can be things like giving an architect overview of our platform and how it fits into their existing systems and their landscape, giving a demo, going through and doing a training. I can spend a lot of time writing white papers, writing articles, how-tos, anything that leaves a trail behind to help enable others to repeat the processes. Because I think that's part of what an architect needs to do is be a trailblazer where, yes, you're thinking about delivering the project, but when you've delivered enough projects, you also kind of think more meta of, well, how do I enable the person that comes next? Or how do I enable the next customer that's going to face this, so you're not starting from scratch and trying to pull it out of a person? You have a document that you can give them or a procedure that you can give them that helps them get to success faster.
Yeah, and that's a trend I see with a lot of CTAs. They feel not just giving back to customers, but giving back to the community. And that's why you're, I guess, on podcasts like this and at Virtual Dreaming. I think, but every architect seems to have that mindset as well, that the people that have got to CTA, it's leaving their customer in a better place, but also leaving the Salesforce ecosystem in a better place.
Yeah, I think very few people get to CTA without having a learning mindset. And part of having a learning mindset is sharing what you know with others. You're not trying to hide it to yourself and say, hey, I have all the information. Haha, you're like, I want to share. But in sharing, you also can engage in conversations, or you can engage in exchange of messages that broadens your learning, because somebody has a different perspective and say, hey, it's very interesting that you said this, but I've seen this other case. And it makes you kind of pause and go, you know what? That's an interesting angle I haven't thought of. So, you know, it's almost not self-serving, but you get something out of it too. It's not an entirely selfish act, because you can grow and learn as a person by sharing what you know.
Yeah, absolutely. And when you're hiring, either in your current role or previous organizations, what kind of skills are you looking for that aren't technical, like that mindset of you know, giving back, but broader than that?
So I'm going to go to the cliche of communication, but I'm going to talk about it differently. It's not like, hey, can you write? Can you speak to somebody? But first of all, can you listen to what somebody is saying and then be able to articulate back the meaning of what they're trying to accomplish in a language that they understand? So for example, maybe you're meeting with the United States government agency, right? And you can do lots of different things for customers, and you've worked with regulations in Australia and Europe. Well, that probably doesn't matter to a US government agency, right? So bringing up those tangential things, like, you're just talking because you're comfortable. You're not listening and trying to communicate and put it back into a language where they feel like you're giving them the path to success. They trust you as that advisor, that guide. So that act of listening and then being able to tailor your message is one aspect of communication. And then the second piece is the language that folks use. And I don't mean, you know, do they speak English or Chinese, but rather, are you being precise and concise? Are you talking about things in a way that are very accurate? So if we talk about the exchange of information or credentials between a system, are we doing authentication? Are we doing authorization? Because the words matter. So making sure you have that right language, and not saying any more than you need to, dropping it when you've made your point. We probably have all talked to people that kind of go on and on and on and say a lot, but there's not a lot there. And what do you end up doing? You tune them out, right? So they're not effective in leading you to success or the customer to be successful.
Yeah, that's a really good overview. I think the listening point is one that people often forget. They think that an interview is for them to showcase everything that they can tell, but they can't do that unless they're listening effectively. So yeah, that's really key. Now, I think obviously we've touched on Einstein, but my final question is, what really still excites you about the Salesforce platform?
I think there's always something different or new to learn. What you relied on in the past may change. So for the longest time, right, you get 10,000 bulk API calls. Well, guess what? That's changing in summer. Now you get 15,000. So a little piece of information that you've known for years is suddenly different. And that's just a small example, but whether it's a new product suite that they acquire or a company that they acquire or a new feature, there's something else that you can say, ooh, how do I put this in my architect tool belt and use it to help a customer in the future? So you might not know everything about it right when it first comes out, but you're kind of like, ooh, I'm gonna remember that because I think that can be useful down the road. That excites me because the possibilities are really endless with Salesforce now.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, very nice point. And if anyone does want to hit you up, obviously you're very well known. People are probably hitting you up all the time, but if anyone has any questions, where's the best place to contact you?
Yeah, definitely either Twitter at Carl Brundage, nothing too crazy to remember there, or LinkedIn if they want. I'm happy to connect with somebody. Just, you know, leave me a message. I get lots and lots of requests sometimes, and I don't know if they're full requests or, you know, just random requests. So just give me a personal message and I'm much more likely to connect with you.
Yeah, nice. I completely agree. So thank you very much. I really appreciate your time. I think we got there a second attempt, so thank you.
My pleasure. And, happy to do it.
All the best. Thank you.
Thanks, Ben.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Talent Hub Talk. If you're enjoying the podcast, we'd love it if you could subscribe and also leave a short review. We're keen for this podcast to reach as many people in the Salesforce ecosystem as possible, and your reviews will help us do that.